Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Chant together text number 9. There's a few verses that have no purport. So this is Canto 7, Chapter 3, text 9. Shrishtva characharam idam tapo yoga samadhina adyaste sarvadishnyebhyaha parameshti najasanam shrishtva characharam idam tapo yoga samadhina adyaste sarvadishnyebhyaha parameshti nijasanam. Okay. Krishna, creating. Chara, moving. Acharam, and not moving. Idam, this. Tapaha, of austerity. Yoga, and mystic power. Samadhina, by practicing the trance. Adyaste, is situated in. Sarva dishnyebhyaha, then all the planets, including the heavenly planets. Parameshti, Lord Brahma, Nija Asanam, his own throne. Well, this is, text 9 is part of 9 and 10, so I'm going to go back to yesterday's verse was text 1, and we're just going to read what follows from that. Text 1 says that Hiranyakashipu wanted to gain all yogic perfections, to be deathless, and to be the only king of the entire universe. He's not a small-time guy. Text number 2. In the valley of Mandara Hill, Hiranyakashipu began performing his austerities by standing with his toes on the ground, and the Sanskrit is pada angushta, just his big toes, whatever that means, on his toes, keeping his arms upward and looking toward the sky. Try it for a little while. This position was extremely difficult, but he accepted it as a means to attain perfection. Notice bhakti is missing. From the hair on Hiranyakashipu's head, there emanated an effulgent light, as brilliant and intolerable as the rays of the sun at the time of dissolution. Seeing the performance of such austere penances, the demigods, who had been wandering throughout the planets, now returned to their respective homes. Text 4, because of Hiranyakashipu's severe austerities, fire came from his head. And this fire and its smoke spread throughout the sky, encompassing the upper and lower planets, which all became extremely hot. He's a hot guy. Text 5. Because of the power of his severe austerities, all the rivers and oceans were agitated. The surface of the globe with its mountains and islands began trembling, and the stars and planets fell. All directions were ablaze. Text 6. Scorched, extremely disturbed because of Hiranyakashipu's severe penances. All the demigods left the planets where they reside and went to the planet of Lord Brahma, where they informed the Creator as follows. Oh, Lord of the demigods, O Master of the universe, because of the fire emanating from Hiranyakashipu's head as a result of his severe austerities, we have become so disturbed that we could not stay in our planets, but have come to you. Text 7. O great person, chief of the universe, if you think it proper, kindly stop these disturbances meant to destroy everything before all your obedient subjects are annihilated. Text 8. Hiranyakashipu had undertaken a most severe type of austerity. Although his plan is not known to you, kindly listen as we submit his intentions. Sankalpa is the Sanskrit. So text 9 and 10 translated together. So that's this verse translated plus the next one. This is his intention. Quote, the supreme person within this universe, Lord Brahma, has gotten his exalted post by dint of severe austerities, mystic power, and trance. Consequently, after creating the universe, he has become the most worshipable demigod within it. Since I am eternal, he's got transcendental knowledge down. He already demonstrated that previously. And time is eternal. I shall endeavor for such austerity, mystic power, and trance for many, many births. And thus I shall occupy the same post occupied by Lord Brahma. Purport. Hiranyakashipu's determination, again in the Sanskrit, the previous verse, sankalpa is intention, it's also in determination, sankalpa. Hiranyakashipu's determination was to occupy the post of Lord Brahma. But this was impossible because Brahma had a long duration of life, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 8:17. Sahasra yuga paryantam aharyad brahmano viduhu. 1,000 yugas equals 1 day of Brahma. The duration of Brahma's life is extremely great, and consequently it was impossible for Hiranyakashipu to occupy that post. Nonetheless, his decision was that since the self, Atma, and time, Kala, are both eternal, if he could not occupy that post in one lifetime, he would continue to execute austerities life after life, so that sometime he would be able to do so. So the presentation by the demigods to Lord Brahma is his intention. I want to therefore read text 11 because it continues his intention. So Hiranyakashipu was thinking, text 11, by dint of my severe austerities, I shall reverse the results of pious and impious activities. Think what that means. I shall overturn all the established practices within the world. Even Dhruvaloka, which will be vanquished, even Dhruvaloka will be vanquished at the end of the millennium, because Dhruvaloka is a spiritual planet. He's going to dissolve a spiritual planet. He's really puffed up, this guy. Therefore, what is the use of it? I shall prefer to remain in the position of Brahma, unquote. Prabhupada's purport. Hiranyakashipu's demoniac determination was explained to Lord Brahma by the demigods, who informed him that Hiranyakashipu wanted to overturn all the established principles. After executing severe austerities, people within this material world are promoted to the heavenly planets, but Hiranyakashipu wanted them to be unhappy, suffering, because of the diplomatic feelings of the demigods, even in the heavenly planets. He wanted those who were harassed in this world by material transactions to be unhappy for the same reason, even in the heavenly planets. Indeed, he wanted to introduce such harassment everywhere. One might ask, how this would be possible, since the universal order has been established since time immemorial? But Hiranyakashipu was proud to declare that he would be able to do everything by the power of his tapasya. He even wanted to make the Vaishnava's position insecure. These are some of the symptoms of asuric determination. It's a classic. So, Krishna also describes, Bhagavad Gita describes, the demoniac nature. In contrast, the divine and the demoniac nature, and here it is in the Bhagavatam, Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu. What a contrast. Father and son. So if you remember from the previous chapter, this is chapter 3, chapter 2, Hiranyakashipu has transcendental knowledge. And he has understanding of the feature of time. But he doesn't understand the connection of the soul with the Supreme, or the connection of time with the Supreme. It's basically up for grabs. Material nature, even as far as he's concerned, spiritual nature, even time, it was a long time ago, but anecdotal. When Walt Disney died, part of his fortune was to freeze his body, put his frozen body in a vault, so that when science evolved to the point where they could make people deathless, they could pull them out of the vault, thaw them out, and make them eternal. He had such faith in atheistic science. The application is specific, but the same principle. Reversal of the natural order of things. By manipulation. Now, some, very similar to what Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the principle of sacrifice. It's a principle. And by sacrifice, just even by the language, it's rendering something sacred, offering unto the Supreme. And so there's a whole section, several verses. Some sacrifice this way, that way, the other way, but just like we heard last night, jnana yoga and karma have, they cannot bear fruit. It's like a tree cannot bear fruit unless there's connection with bhakti. So it's like, that's the water that makes the tree grow. So without bhakti, without the connection with the Supreme, the rendering something sacred by offering to the Supreme, minus that, you can't bear fruit. Although, within those activities, minus connection with the Supreme, there's some power. There's power within knowledge. Even, I mean specifically, transcendental knowledge. What's the potency that's within jnana is detachment, vairagya. Jnana vairagya. But that vairagya, without some touch of bhakti, cannot deliver one to sayujya. The idea of impersonalism becoming one with the Supreme is notional only. There must be, according to our teachings, there must be some connection with bhakti. Some. Without that some connection, it can't bear fruit. They're not independent. They're dependent. Whereas bhakti is replete with spiritual potencies. The spiritual potency to dissolve the soul's connection with matter. What's the soul's connection with matter? False ego. We don't belong to this material world, but we think we do. Paropi manyate anartam. Although we're transcendental, paro api, although we're transcendental, we think we're a product of material nature. Exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in this divine and demoniac nature, chapter 16. That's what's the cause of life? Sex life produces life. And then we have life. You know, you don't need God in the picture, you just need sex life and produce life. Chemicals combine and boom, you got life. You don't need God in the picture. So, I was saying, as Krishna says, there are different forms of sacrifice. Some prefer this way, that way, the other way. But the essence, there's a principle of sacrifice, and that's offering unto the Supreme. Taking that which is of this plane and connecting with the transcendental plane through devotion to the Supreme of some degree or another. Less degree, greater degree, some degree, then fruit can come. You know, the fruit of connection with transcendence. So detachment from matter is incomplete. Hiranyakashipu is an example. His methodology was tapasya, or hearing. He had great confidence in tapasya. He looked at Lord Brahma, and you know, the example setter person whose position he was coveting. He was the most powerful person in the universe, except for Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma was occupied. So he had already conquered Indra. He's the king of heaven. So now if I can just become eternal, then I'm God. But there's somebody else occupying the post, so I'll just, so his godlessness, his asura bhav, was faith in his own effort. Kartha, aham, I am the doer. And specifically fixing it upon tapasya. And so he did it. And what was his sankalpa? What was his wish or his determination or his intention? Mystic powers, everything. Live eternally and occupy the post of Brahma. So I'll be worshipped by everybody, including the demigods. Yay. So that was the fuel in his tank, and he just was, you know, he had a capacity for austerity that, who can even imagine? I mean, for fun, you can try it. Stand on your toes. Hold your hands in the air. Stretched out and look up to the sky. How long can you stand there? It's hardly even just to balance, but to speak of stand there. And so what was in his mind while his body was doing that? His sankalpa. I want eternal life. I want all mystic powers. So what are mystic powers? Prabhupada discusses that in his writings. They're just subtle manipulations of matter. Let's take, you know, anima. You become light, very light. You can fly in the sky, you know, like the classic notion of a yogi that can fly in his magic carpet. Right? Like, you know, when we were kids, flying a magic, a yogi can fly in a carpet. So, scientists want to do this Prabhupada statement, they want to do the same thing, get in an airplane and fly in the sky. So one is by machine, and the other is by mantra. So yantra and mantra. But it's, you know, an aspiration for manipulation of the laws of matter such that I could do something wonderful. That seems to defy the natural order of things. And then just continue with each of the mystic powers and to live eternally. So there's an obvious glitch in the transcendental knowledge that I'm eternal and time is eternal. And so since the soul is eternal and time is eternal, I want to become eternal. I just need tapasya to get there. Although I'm already eternal. So, but the body isn't. The body of Hiranyakashipu was born, and the body of Hiranyakashipu was going to die. The body of Lord Brahma was born, and the body of Lord Brahma is going to die. There's not deathlessness in the body of Lord Brahma. So there's a glitch. But the desire of the asura is so strong, the obvious can't be seen. I've been listening a little bit to Radhika Raman's description of Jiva Goswami Sandarbhas. He was recently here. You had his association. He was speaking on a certain subject matter while he was here. But he's particularly familiar with the Sandarbhas. And in Tattva Sandarbha, there's a section where it's done in further detail in Paramatma Sandarbha, but even in Tattva Sandarbha, the fallacy of impersonalism. It's very similar to this. Very similar. You know, the glitch as terminology. Now, how can the soul become God or be one with God in an absolute sense? He's arguing in favor of, Jiva Goswami argues in favor of achintya bheda abheda tattva. And to think there's only abheda, there's only the oneness of the living entity with Brahman, because there are Vedic statements that say aham brahmasmi, etc., tattvamasi, etc. The famous aphorisms that Shankaracharya would hold up and say, see, this is what the Shruti says. We're God. and then stitch this and that and the other thing together in an interesting quilt, and you get, we're God. But then there are certainly other statements that say the soul and the living entity are different. Mami Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, and so many others. The oneness and difference philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must be accepted. So he goes through the fallacy of logic without, it's a long description, so I'm not going to do it just now. I'll do it during the Tattva Sandarbha seminar. But it's irrational. Just so to come back to Hiranyakashipu. It's irrational. He understands the eternality, specifically. He understands the eternality of the soul. He understands the eternality of time. And then, therefore, through tapasya, the body will also become eternal. That which is temporary will become eternal. I want to reverse the laws of nature. And I can do it. I have faith in the power of tapasya with no connection with the Supreme or the purpose of offering unto the Supreme my tapasya. It's fundamentally irrational. And it's born of the demoniac spirit. Want to read from chapter 16, because we're speaking about the demoniac spirit in the purport. The phrase that Prabhupada used repeatedly to describe the demoniac spirit is found in text 14 of chapter 16. Ishvaro ham aham bhogi, siddho ham balavan sukhi. You heard that before? Ishvaro ham aham bhogi, siddho ham. Siddho ham. I am perfect. Balavan sukhi. Perfect, powerful, and happy. Perfect, powerful, and happy. That's me. And Ishuro Ham, I am the Lord of everything. Aham Bhogi, I am the enjoyer. Siddho Ham, notice who's at the center. I'm perfect. And Balavan, powerful and happy. So here's the translation of the whole section. The demoniac person thinks, you can think of Hiranyakashipu, or you can think of, you know, the tiny Prabhupada called them, the tiny Hiranyakashipus of today. There's nobody that can do what Hiranyakashipu was doing, but they're certainly doing austerities, with a smaller time version of the same demoniac spirit, godless spirit. So much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. That's the first verse. He is my enemy, and I have killed him. And my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. That's text 14, and here is 15. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. Look at that. His was tapasya, and theirs may be yajna. Sacrifice, right? Minus the person unto whom I offer the sacrifice. It's just sacrifice. When Here's two anecdotes. One is I think I can say it. Professor Dimmick. You know Professor Dimmick. He was a Sanskrit scholar at University of Chicago once upon a time. And he made a interesting, sometimes controversial support of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, kind of like in a letter of appreciation without some detail. So one of his students, Professor Dimmick's students, had studied at the University of Chicago, was living in Connecticut, and one of our ISKCON devotees who lived in Connecticut was invited to give a presentation on Krishna consciousness, introduction to Krishna consciousness at the university. And it was an evening course. He was a, you know, working fellow. So it was an evening course, like kind of like an anthropology class or something, a world religion class or something. So he narrated this to me. So he put the Maha Mantra on the board and explained, you know, Krishna consciousness. And there was a person at the end who came forward. He didn't ask a question, but at the end he came and marked the diacritics underneath Krishna. And so this devotee said, "Oh, you know Sanskrit?" He said, "Yes." "And you have misled the audience the whole evening." He said, "Well, can you explain?" He said, "The Vedas teach sacrifice, and you made no mention of sacrifice." And this devotee went on to explain the whole process of bhakti itself is sacrifice. It's the principle of surrendering oneself, body, mind, and words, and soul, unto the service of the Supreme. And the fellow said, "No, sacrifice." Well, then this devotee said, "Well, sacrifice unto whom?" Answer, "Not unto whom." Sacrifice. Got it? Not unto whom. "I shall perform sacrifices." Unto whom? Not unto whom. Sacrifices. Why? Because within the act of sacrifice, according to Vedic teaching, there is some merit, and you just do lots and 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 lots of sacrifices. Not unto whom, just sacrifices. And you'll achieve the topmost position possible. So there's faith in the Vedic system that's atheistic. You got it. And similarly, persons can chant mantras. And there's no person who you're addressing. It's just a mantra. It's a powerful sound vibration. And the purpose of the mantra is you get some power. Impersonal. To become one with the Supreme. Because that's the intention. So the act itself is not the essence. It's the consciousness behind the act. It's the essence. For all that, Prabhupada writes the same thing in Bhagavad Gita purport about bhakti. Bhakti is the spirit, you can say again, the intention or the determination, the purpose for which you're doing what you're doing. So in the beginning, we may not know what the purpose is. From the beginning, generally, we don't know what the purpose is. There's something that's preliminary faith is there's something beyond this facade of all the illusory activities of life. Strip it all down and there's something else. There's a higher purpose of life. That much I have faith in. I don't know what it is. And then through the association of one who's carrying bhakti, that innate bhakti can awaken. Oh, it's the Supreme sacrifice or the connection of loving relationship with the Supreme through the association of devotees. That's possible. And without the association of devotees, that's not going to awaken. Although it's intuitively and intrinsically there. it'll remain dormant and it'll find another venue or another outlet for something higher. So something higher will be something else. And the demoniac nature is this one. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity. And thus I shall rejoice, unquote. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Another example of this, you know, Prabhupada calls it high-grade activity. Familiar with that term? And within the Bhagavatam, there's example after example of verses that say it's not this or that or that or this or the other thing or the other thing that one can achieve the goal of life. Although those things may be useful if there's bhakti. We do austerity, we do charity, we do sacrifice, we do all these things. But that's not the essence. The essence is bhakti. So another example is Prabhupada's discussion with Professor Durkheim. I like this example. Because Prabhupada is showing immense patience where Professor Durkheim, being a professor, he has reposed faith in knowledge. And so he was indicating the importance of development of knowledge. And Prabhupada was saying, for what purpose? What was the application? What's the sankalpa behind knowledge? And Professor Durkheim was saying, no purpose. Just knowledge for knowledge's sake. And Prabhupada was saying, application, please. The intention, where is this knowledge? You know, it just kept coming back, and finally Prabhupada slammed him and, you know, spelled it out in detail. It's a classic. It's like Ravana's idea of building a staircase to heaven. Just do the mechanical thing and depend on your own efforts. Do austerities, do sacrifices, do charity, do these things. Like Jarasandha. Jarasandha is another classic. Jarasandha was known by Krishna himself that he was very charitable to brahmanas. It's based on that knowledge of Jarasandha's nature that they went in disguise as brahmanas to beg some charity from Jarasandha. Here comes Bhima. Huge body, Bhima, in the dress of a brahmana. You're very interesting looking brahmanas. I've never seen brahmanas like you before. Jarasandha understood that it was a guise or disguise. But he said, anyway, you come as brahmanas, so what charity would you like? We'd like to fight you. Oh. Okay. So be it. This is the charity to a brahmana. But that black one, I don't want to fight him. He's a coward. And that one over there, he's not worthy, but that big one, I'll fight him. Bhima. So demons can have, you know, high grade activities or religious type of convictions. Just remember this dialogue that took place in the previous chapter of Hiranyakashipu, speaking transcendental knowledge, right? But demoniac. And what's the essence? The essence is godlessness. Knowledge not for the sake of serving the Supreme, but knowledge for knowledge's sake and austerity for austerity's sake, so I become powerful, etc. Then there's an aspiration. I want something. Mystic powers. Eternal life. big position. And the demigods were powerless to stop him. He became fire and smoke and mountains trembling. Big time austerity. So persons can't do that like Hiranyakashipu did that. So they're small Hiranyakashipus. But, you know, the spirit is similar. It's just smaller scale. And the challenge for the Vaishnavas, as described directly in Prabhupada's writing here, even he wanted to disturb the Vaishnavas. He even wanted to make the Vaishnavas' position insecure. These are some of the symptoms of asuric determination. You know, reversal of the natural order of things and make everybody fearful and make everybody suffer and I'm powerful. Not a nice kind of a person to have around. And there are such persons of greater or lesser degrees. So the demigods had approached Lord Brahma, help! If you feel it's appropriate, please stop this disturbance somehow. To be continued. Any comments? Yes, questions?
Thank you, Maharaj. My question is, generally, determination according to the modes of nature, determination in the mode of goodness is unbreakable. Unbreakable. So I'm curious, sometimes we hear about great demons who seem to have very strong determination, but we couldn't say really that they're in the mode of goodness. You know, they're not worshiping, their behavior, their consciousness is not in the mode of goodness, but they seem to develop very strong determination.
Yeah, you bet.
Is that a contradiction?
No. Passion has its power. And ignorance has its power. I want to destroy. But uniquely, to overcome those lower modes of nature, which are strong and have their power, it's very strong and unique kind of quality of determination. That's my understanding of what that means. To maintain oneself in the mode of goodness ain't easy because the lower modes of nature are very active. Look at, you know, the behaviors of some of the demigods and the Gandharvas and this and that. You know, the upper planetary systems, maintaining the quality of goodness, takes strong determination, and you know, and sense of purpose. So determination. Prabhupada uses sankalpa. He has translated interchangeably determination and purpose or intention. Someone has to be very, very clear about intention to stay in the mode of goodness, and. Strive for that. Purity requires striving with great determination. So why would, like this discussion yesterday evening, the Mataji was asking about, you know, bhakti doesn't depend on purity, so why should we strive for purity? So it gives a sustained, atmosphere for incubation chamber for bhakti. It's pleasing to Krishna, so we want it. It assists our devotion, so we want it. We accept it because we want it. We want that devotion to Krishna. So take great determination. You know, but to be a powerful materialist takes a lot of determination too. Different kind. inspired by a different carrot, the carrot of fruitive activity, or I want to destroy. Think of, you know, the terrorists and the complicated, intricate plans they make for destroying things. Whew. A lot of determination. You have something? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for a wonderful class. Maybe you could speak about a few of the points discussed, including today and from yesterday, your class. So Hiranyakashipu, you know, his demoniac mentality or anyone's mentality is I'm superior.
Hiranyakashipu had a demoniac mentality.
Yeah. Namely, I'm superior and everyone else is inferior.
I'm superior, everyone else is inferior.
Yeah.
Repeating back because I'm practically deaf, so sorry. Just want to make sure I've got what your words are.
Mm-hmm. So on a more lighter note, related to your class yesterday, you were making some really points I kind of try to keep in mind all the time is that...
Yesterday evening?
Yeah, yesterday evening.
Okay.
So you were making a point that whether one is has sadhana bhakti, bhakti, or prima bhakti, it's all, you know, bhakti, it's in the realm of bhakti, or whether one is uttama adhikari, madhyama, or kanishtha. Not that we should. So this brings to mind one statement by, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's something I kind of try to keep in mind all the time. It's kind of like a nightmare statement. It's in Adilila 8, chapter 8, verse 16. It says, Babu Jamakari Yadu Shadhanam Kirtanam Sabhutana Paya Krishna Pade Primadam.
Krishna Pade Primadam.
Yeah, despite chanting the Hare Krishna for many births, you know, if one is infected with the 10 offenses, he still won't get the desired result, which is Krishna Prema. And that's kind of like scary. And then that
that's serious, yeah.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. It's like, what am I wasting my time?
But well, it's not a waste of time.
Yeah.
It's just the ultimate goal will not be attained. Certainly, yeah. Krishna will be pleased, but the ultimate goal, so it's not a nightmare. It's, you know, it's, you're not achieving that which Lord Chaitanya wishes to give you. You're shortchanging yourself, but it's not a nightmare. Go ahead.
So in a purport, Prabhupada mentions that in this regard that one should strictly, and I'd like to give a few examples, maybe we can speak about it from the Shastras. Prabhupada mentioned that one should strictly follow Lord Chaitanya's verse of being more humble than a blade of grass, etc., offering respect to everyone. This kind of brings to mind that sometimes...
I really like your questions. You give like a commentary instead of a question. Do you have a question or have just a commentary?
No, it's more of, can you elaborate on it, basically?
Elaborate on?
Yeah, elaborate. On
what?
Sometimes in our devotional life, here's my question. Throughout the years in our devotional life, sometimes... It's natural that sometimes we distinguish between devotees who are superior and those who are inferior. In the sense that, this relates to your class last night, that sometimes...
Well, we're enjoined, as madhyamas, excuse me, we're enjoined, I'm elaborating, we're enjoined, we're instructed, as madhyamas, to make distinction. That was part of the whole message of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that those who are innocent, those are the persons whom bhakti should be given to, and those that are Hiranyakashipus or demoniac, we don't, using biblical language, you don't cast pearls before swine. We don't give the opportunity to demoniac people to make offense that's going to make their life even more difficult due to offense. So we're discriminating. And then amongst the devotees, there's respect. And there's appropriate offering of respect according to one's position. We're enjoined to make those distinctions. And in all cases, it's respect. It's just appropriate to the position of respect. And so it's not a material kind of discrimination. It's a spiritual, what is the etiquette for me in this situation, that situation, and another situation? How should I carry myself? How should I speak? How should I behave? Rupa, it's right in nectar of instruction of Rupa Goswami saying for this and that and that. They're different behaviors. So how do you know what different position is? If you're Madhyama, you'll know. If you're Uttama, you'll see everyone is a devotee. And if you're Kanishta, you won't know either. So it's you know, in the stage of devotion where we are, we're encouraged or instructed or enjoined to, I mean, it's not like you hook somebody up to a bhakti meter and say, okay, you're at 9, and so I'll behave this way. But, you know, there are symptoms, and there are also cultural considerations, elderly people, children, those in the renounced order of life, brahmana. So there's ways in which, regardless of the person, just like, here's an example. One example. 1974, 1975, in Mayapur. There, when we were in Mayapur having our Mayapur festival, there was a Mayavadi sannyasi that came to Mayapur. And so the devotees asked Prabhupada, what is the etiquette? How should we behave when the sannyasi, Mayavadi sannyasi walks by? Prabhupada said, two things. You pay your obeisances because he's a sannyasi. And don't mingle with that sannyasi because he's a Mayavadi. So we should recognize positions, be respectful in appropriate ways, and then, you know, ultimately everything is offered to Krishna according to the guidance we have from the scriptures and our acharyas. We may not be so good at it, but we're, you know, to cultivate that understanding and that appropriate offering of respect for the pleasure of Krishna. Okay? Something else? You have something? No? Just tapping? Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.